This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This past week, the notorious Jack Kevorkian emerged from prison. The man known as Dr. Death declared that he would continue to argue that the terminally and chronically ill have the right to the assistance of a physician to end their lives, but he said he would no longer do it. While Kevorkian was behind bars, the debate over physician-assisted suicide evolved. It's now legal in one state, Oregon, and this week the California Assembly considers a similar measure. So after he served his sentence, what do you think about Jack Kevorkian? Did he help his cause or hurt it? Do patients find a way to end their suffering illegally, and do they get help? And where do you stand on legalization? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, Scooter Libby gets 2.5 years in prison. What do prisoners think about his crime and his punishment? But first, Jack Kevorkian and physician-assisted suicide. Joining us now is Dr. Linda Ganzini. She's professor of psychiatry and medicine at Oregon Health and Science and joins us from her office in Portland, Oregon. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much for asking me.
And Linda, before we get started, Jack Kevorkian held a news conference about an hour ago. He was asked if he thought he might renew his activities after he completes his parole, whether he would participate in another assisted suicide.
When I entered prison, I said, I'll never do it again. There's no time limit. I will not do it again because it would be counterproductive. What would it serve? What purpose? More prosecutions, more dodging the prosecutor, more lies, more false imprisonments. It's not worth it. It's now up to the people to fight for their right, and this is a right. It's a natural right. You're born with that right.
Jack Kevorkian speaking about an hour ago at a news conference. And Linda, you've had a lot of experience in this field. How do people react now to the name Jack Kevorkian?
Well, I think he is increasingly seen as a historical figure. He got a great deal of notoriety. He got a great deal of attention to this issue. But the issue has evolved, and I don't think people believe that he represents you know, what's going on in Oregon or the Oregon's Death with Dignity Act.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you've also surveyed doctors in Oregon about their attitudes on assisted suicide. Is Jack Kevorkian in any way typical?
I think that he is, you know, on an extreme. I think in Oregon, the physicians, healthcare professionals are still divided in their views about it, though many of the worries they had about the law have not come to pass. I think there's people at both ends of the spectrum who are still very vocal. But for the most part, Oregon has gone on and tried to really overall improve care of the terminally ill.
Mm.
And people, only a very small proportion of those people want assisted suicide.
And I should say there's an important distinction. One of the things that Jack Kevorkian talked about was not only the terminally ill, but the chronically ill, people suffering great pain, but who were not under a diagnosis that they were going to be dying anytime soon. And that's certainly not what the law calls for in Oregon.
That's right. The Oregon law restricts assisted suicide to people with an estimated less than 6 months of life. Most of the people who choose the law have cancer. A second physician needs to confirm that life expectancy. And Jack Kevorkian included people with chronic illness. Another thing is that Jack Kevorkian practiced euthanasia. He actively killed people where Oregon law specifies that the person has to be able to take the medication on their own.
Now, in the time that he's been in prison, I know you've conducted surveys on public attitudes towards physician aid in dying. Where do people stand on this issue? And I know it's not a simple question.
It's not a simple question. It is very, the kinds of results you get are very sensitive to how you ask the question. In Oregon, there's a clear core third of the population that continues to oppose assisted suicide, for the most part for moral reasons. I think that the people, even among people who support it, physicians who support it, only a minority are willing to write these prescriptions. So I think there's a, you know, there's a middle group that has a fair amount of ambivalence about the law.
I was also curious to see, as you conducted the survey, of those who have applied for this right to physician-assisted suicide, not all have availed themselves of the opportunity.
That's right. Only about 1 in 10 people who make an explicit request to a physician actually dies of assisted suicide. Some people wait until too late in the course of their illness. There's a 15-day waiting period. Often they lose the ability to carry through before they die. Some simply can't find a willing physician. Some get the medication and find that they really don't need to use it. So.
Okay. As we continue to look at this, does Oregon feel, and is Oregon, do you think, obviously you know that this is being under consideration at the moment in California, is this a beginning of a wave of expansion, do you think?
I'm not really certain. I think one of the more surprising things is that now, over a decade after Oregon started this experiment, that there are no other states who have been willing to actually enact similar proposals, even though many states have considered it. So I think there's a great deal of hesitancy, even though many people consider Oregon's experiment in many ways a success. There's a great deal of hesitance among other states to try the same thing. And it, just because Oregon has managed to do this, I think, in a thoughtful, responsible way, doesn't mean that that would happen in other states. Oregon's a small, fairly cohesive state, and we had 3 years to prepare for the law.
We're talking with Dr. Lindsay Ganzini about the release earlier this week of Dr. Jack Kevorkian and, of course, the broader issue of physician-assisted suicide, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Mark. Mark with us in Lansing, Michigan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm a former paramedic. I spent years taking care of people that I really believed should have the right to make a choice about dying with dignity. About 10 years ago, I had a chance to meet Dr. Kevorkian in East Lansing. I shook his hand and signed his petition and told him I fully supported what he was doing. But just the way that he went about pursuing his cause and the actions that he took that landed him in prison, I think brought too much negative attention to the cause and kind of detracted from people who have a right to make that choice to die with dignity's ability to forward that cause.
When you say negative publicity, negative attention, by filming them, by seemingly seeking publicity?
By seemingly seeking publicity and sensationalizing what he was doing.
And going beyond, as Dr. Ganzini said, he went beyond a physician-assisted suicide and to euthanasia.
Exactly.
And that, you think, brought disrepute on his cause?
I think so. I think that it changed a lot of people's way of thinking when looking at the issue, because he went to such extremes to try to make his point.
All right. Thanks very much, Mark. Appreciate the phone
Thank
call.
Thank you very much.
Joining us now is Nancy Kellum. She's a mother of three who's been diagnosed with incurable colon cancer. She's an advocate for the bill in the California Assembly that would make it legal for doctors to prescribe legal pills to terminally ill patients. And she joins us now by phone from her home in Los Altos, California. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good morning, Neil.
And I wonder, as you've been through this debate in California, and obviously somebody very close to it, has the name Jack Kevorkian come up at all?
Not really. In fact, I don't even like the term assisted suicide. To me, suicide is what people who should go on living do, and I prefer the term aid in dying. And Dr. Kevorkian, to me, what he was doing lacked oversight, it lacked safeguards, and his methods were distasteful.
Mm-hmm. And you have, regrettably, I think, a lot of experience with this in your family, going back to your mother.
Right. I first decided to offer my support for this bill when I read in the newspaper that 70% of Californians support it, but it's facing a hard fight in the Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And it just reminded me of my mother's death 2 years ago. She was just 91. Organs were failing, nothing really wrong with her, and my dad was taking care of her, and she wanted to die at home, and he expected she would have a peaceful death. She would go to sleep one night and simply not wake up. And he wasn't prepared for dealing with what's called death throes, T-H-R-O-E-S. And the reason there's a word for it, and it's in our dictionary, is because it happens quite often that people have a hard, painful struggle to death, and she would never have wanted it. She would never have wanted to put him through it. And now that I'm facing an incurable illness, and I know that I don't want my family to know that I went through that at the end of my life.
And I assume that's at least part of the reason why you're advocating for this measure.
You got that right.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to your family about it?
My husband. My kids are really too young. I don't like them watching PG-13 movies, and this is way beyond PG-13.
I can understand that, but eventually, if the inevitable happens, they're going to have to be told.
Right. Right now, they know that I have a disease that can kill me and that the medicine is keeping me alive.
Stay with us, if you will. And also, Dr. Ganzini, stay with us as well. If you'd like to join our conversation about Dr. Jack Kevorkian and his effect on the debate over physician-assisted suicide, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. You can also reach us by email, as I said, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's been 8 years since Jack Kevorkian went to jail for assisting in the suicide of a man who was terminally ill, and a lot has changed since that case began. Oregon passed a law that allows physician-assisted suicide in some cases. Now, the legislature in California debates a similar law. Still, Kevorkian thinks these laws don't go far enough. Our focus today is how you feel about physician-assisted suicide and the legacy of Jack Kevorkian. Email is talk@npr.org. You can call us, 800-989-8255. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guests are Dr. Linda Ganzini, professor of psychiatry and medicine at Oregon Health and Science, and Nancy Kellum, an advocate for the physician-assisted bill in the California Assembly. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Richard. Richard with us from Framingham, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a veterinarian, and as such, I have a lot of experience with euthanasia. Now, while I would never equate human life with animal life, people do say two things when they have their animal euthanized. They've come to this very painful decision, but they say, I didn't want to see him suffer anymore. And then they often say, this is the way I would like to go, too.
Hmm.
And I think this says two things. One is that it's really about the patient and not about the state or the doctor or the family or the kids. It's about the suffering. And secondly is that they really don't like to see things that that have a large amount of suffering and loss of dignity.
Hmm. I wonder, Dr. Ganzini, how does that Richard's experience correlate with people's feelings in the surveys you've done about the physician-assisted suicide?
I think when people who consider assisted suicide look down the road, they have a terminal illness, they have a great deal of fear about what's coming. They want to have control. They want to maintain their independence. So that's their motivation. They do often bring up to me that there's a whole idea that we treat our animals better than we treat patients on this issue. One of the important distinctions, though, between euthanasia and assisted suicide is that assisted suicide gives people an added sense of control because they're doing it rather than having somebody do it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that that's a distinction that helps preserve people's autonomy.
And Nancy Kellum, would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think it just relieves people's anxiety if they know that they're going to have a choice.
Hmm.
I think that's why in Oregon we've seen that what was the statistic? Only 10% have actually used the drugs, but mm-hmm. it just relieves anxiety.
Richard, thanks.
I think in these cases, you know what? Obviously, animals can't kill themselves, but what we're doing is we're putting ourselves in their position. What they would do, were they able?
Hmm.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks very much for the call, Richard. Let's see if we can get Janet on the line. Janet's with us from Bay Village, Ohio.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
In addition to one question I'd like to ask of the doctor, I definitely agree with the previous callers and would like to just add one thing to what the veterinarian added about the pet death. And that is that death seems to be a basic human right. If you could choose the way you should die, it should be a basic human right, unencumbered by, he listed the what it shouldn't be, including the as a choice. And I think it should not be encumbered by religious ideology because it casts a veil over it. Beliefs, it doesn't need belief systems. It clouds the issue.
In a few minutes,
I'd like to add that and ask her in that same vein as to what the veterinarian and the previous callers have said. Oregon differs in that the patient must take the dose, the final dose. So how does one do that? How do the medical professionals execute that when the patient is unable to?
Yeah, if the patient is physically unable to take the pill.
Dr.
Ganzini?
I think that one of the things that's become clear in the last decade since we started this debate is that people have lots of options to maintain control at the end of their life. For example, one of the things we found out after we started to study this is that there's twice as many people in Oregon who, if they for some reason can't get assisted suicide or can't access a doctor, simply stop eating and drinking. And in a study that we did, we found out that they had very peaceful deaths that gave them a lot of control. In addition, it's become increasingly clear that physicians, for patients who have suffering or pain that can't be controlled, can offer deep sedation for people until they die that's not considered euthanasia. So I think that there are very many different ways that people can maintain control and avoid suffering at the end of life. And one of our jobs as health professionals, not just in Oregon but across the country, is to have conversations with people about their fears and about their choices.
And Nancy Kellum, I'd like to ask you, Janet was talking about your choices, but some would argue, and we're going to hear from somebody who takes this position in a minute, but I know you've heard this in the debate in California, that in some cases they fear that patients are being pressured either by themselves, their guilt over what they're costing their families, by their families, or by the process, that they may not actually feel that they do have a choice and entered into this under pressure.
Well, I don't have any direct knowledge about that, but my opinion is that people who are pressuring terminally ill people to end their lives prematurely are so callous that I doubt that they really care whether they're suffering or not.
Nancy Kellum, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your call, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Nancy
Bye-bye.
Kellum, a mother of three who's been diagnosed with incurable colon cancer, an advocate for the bill in the California Assembly that would make it legal for doctors to prescribe lethal pills to terminally ill patients. And also, Janet, by the way, thanks very much for the call. Joining us now is Gail Atterbury. She's Executive Director of Oregon Right to Life. She's with us on the phone from Eugene, Oregon, and nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
And I wonder, we're asking people today, obviously, on the release of Jack Kevorkian, how do you think he changed the debate, and what does his release from prison mean, if anything, to this debate now?
Well, I'm not entirely sure it means a lot. I understand he's on the circuit now. And I just talked to someone who had watched him and was not terribly impressed with him. I do believe he definitely heightened the debate during his active years. I do believe that his actions and his opinions are still on the outside, even of those who agree with assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of how the law is working there in Oregon, what's your opinion on that?
Well, my opinion is that we do not know a lot. We have raw numbers from the state, which we can look at those, and we have some newspaper articles. Occasionally, a family who has participated in an assisted suicide with a beloved one will come forward after the event and talk to the newspapers. So we have a few real-life studies, so to look at, but most of them are just raw numbers. So it's sometimes hard to, well, in fact, it's impossible to know the details of every person's death, but we do have some things that we can look at through the numbers. One of the things that kind of irritates me, actually, is in both campaigns that we had here in the state, the leading reason that the proponents talked about in all of their ads, their radio and TV ads, and in newspaper, was the need for having this because of unrelented pain that could not be controlled, and this was certainly the reason that we needed it. Now, this is certainly a sympathetic reason for wanting this, and it tugged at a lot of people's emotions. A lot of people had family that reminded them of,
yeah,
perhaps their death. So, but the reality is, when we look at the numbers of why people accessed assisted suicide, and there is a breakdown of that in the numbers, the least used reason is pain. And it is not even experience pain, it's fear of pain.
So you feel like you were misled.
We were.
Yeah, but as you respond to the argument that people should have the choice of this decision, and in fact, given the choice, a lot of people then decide not to do it themselves.
A lot. That's true. But we still are opposed to the whole idea of assisted suicide because it is doctors helping patients kill themselves. And we are opposed to that, and we always have been. Now, this is not a new idea. The new idea, basically, is assisted suicide, and the new thing is having legalized assisted suicide. However, as Solomon said once in the Bible somewhere, there's nothing new under the sun, and there has always been a press for assisted suicide. Even as far centuries and centuries ago, far back, when Hippocrates made his Hippocratic Oath, out of apparently a press for assisted suicide even centuries ago, where in fact they realized, even centuries ago, doctors realized that the role of a doctor was to not to kill their patient, but to heal if possible and to comfort when it wasn't possible.
Yeah. First, do no harm.
That's right.
How it
That's
begins.
Exactly right. So the fact that we're opposed to assisted suicide is not something brand new. We didn't just rise up out of the ground to fight this new idea. It's been a long-held tradition by physicians through the centuries.
Gail Atterbury, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Gail Atterbury, Executive Director of Oregon Right to Life. She joined us by phone from her home in Eugene, Oregon. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Jason. Jason calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you for taking my call on this subject. I really appreciate it, Neil.
Go ahead.
I'm rather close to this issue. My mother died last month of metastatic cancer. When they had found that it was already in stage 4, it was way too late. At the time, she lived in Pennsylvania, which does not support any sort of assisted suicide. She later moved to Oregon. She was only here for a couple of months, so perhaps she didn't have enough time to undergo the assisted suicide. But I was there. I could see how much my mother was suffering. And if it could have been within my power, And if she would have even known about it, I fully believe that she would have done it. And for people to sit back and presume what's best for somebody else is irritating beyond belief. Mm. Nobody in this world has a right to tell you what you can and cannot do. If you're at the end of your life and you know it's going to happen, and there's no doubt. Her body was riddled with tumors, and she was on death's door.
Did she move to Oregon with the idea of that law?
Well, when she moved to Oregon, she only had a couple months left. She was already at the end. She had already had full body radiation. Her immune system had been shut down. It was a done deal. I think for somebody to have for people to have this right to life campaign,
mm-hmm.
that's garbage. All right. Now, if I'm someday, you know, when I'm at the end of my life, and I choose to take my life to end my suffering, regardless of how I do it, I should have that right. And there shouldn't be anybody to take that right away from me. It is a personal decision.
Jason, we're very sorry for your loss. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil.
And we're talking about Jack Kevorkian and physician-assisted suicide. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Natalie. Natalie's with us from Davis, California.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, I'm an attorney, but I also have multiple sclerosis, and I'm really concerned that people are using this word dignity in a way that they're projecting their idea of living with dignity versus dying with dignity. I'm sure a lot of people think the way I live is not that dignified. But as far as this bill that's in the Assembly here in California, I'm really concerned as a person with a chronic condition that patients are going to feel pressured to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are a bunch of safeguards written in, but the idea that the doctor's going to have this on their list of choices to hand to patients and patients' family members, you know, is the patient going to feel pressured so that their family isn't suffering or so that their family doesn't have any financial issues having to do with their health care? I just think it's very dangerous.
Is there any way that you would think, under any circumstances, any safeguard that would could prevent that?
Well, this has a lot of safeguards built in, but the problem is, I mean, I've dealt with a lot of doctors, and God bless them, they don't have a crystal ball. I know somebody that 2.5 years ago was told he had 3 months to live, and he's still alive and well and rollerblading. And, you know, the doctors don't know. But the way that these safeguards are in this bill, two doctors have to say the person has less than 6 months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my friend would have gotten that from two doctors 2.5 years ago. And I just have a feeling that people are going to make this choice for a lot of reasons when really I think that medical care should be focused more on end-of-life decisions having to do with pain control and making sure people have access to really good health care.
Natalie, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Dr. Ganzini, getting back to you, when people talk about the reasons they do go ahead and consider this, what reasons are they?
People who, in my interviews with dozens of people who are pursuing assisted suicide and their families, the physicians, the hospice workers, there's a great deal of agreement that people who want assisted suicide have had a lifelong value on maintaining control and independence. They do not like the idea of other people taking care of them. They often pride themselves on their lack of denial about what's coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they are people who have been in the driver's seat in their life, and they want to leave this world in the driver's seat. So those are the characteristics of people.
Is Gail Atterbury right when she said that listing, you know, excruciating pain is not one of the top reasons?
She is right. It's very unusual for someone to pursue assisted suicide because they cannot get control of pain. Now, some people are motivated by the concern that in the future that they will have pain, but it's very unusual for active pain to be the reason why people pursue assisted suicide.
Dr. Ganzini, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. Linda Ganzini is a professor of psychiatry and medicine at Oregon Health and Science. She joins us today from her office in Portland, Oregon. Coming up, Lewis Scooter Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Cheney, is sentenced to 2.5 years, and we'll hear about a group of prison inmates who debated his crime and his punishment. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.